Good morning. Welcome to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. Thank you for tuning in to share time and rhythm with us. Welcome to this dance space. Well, as we enter into the flow of today's conversation, as always, we invite you to come in as we explore the stories that live both on and beyond the stage. And today, my upcoming guest has shared that she lives by the following: lead with empathy and one deep breath. Coming up on the show, multi-focused dance artist, scholar, writer, and movement educator P. Megan Andrews is here and will be with us for the full hour. So stay tuned and stay locked in right here to CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a break and be right back with more of Turnout Radio right after this. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. As a multi-focused dance artist, scholar, writer, and movement educator, P. Megan Andrews embraces a portfolio of activities that differently combines her expertise, skills, and passions. Three themes run through them all: movement, communication, and education. She has been a leader, advocate, and mentor in the dance sector for over 25 years and maintains an active practice in contemporary, experimental, multimedia performance and research. She is also the executive director at DTRC Dancer Transition Resource Center and the founding editor of the Dance Current magazine. Please join me in welcoming to the show P. Megan Andrews.
Thank you so much, Nicole. It's such a pleasure to be here. I'm really grateful to be in conversation with you today.
I have been looking forward to today's chat with great anticipation.
Thank you.
How are you doing as you come into the space today?
Feeling happy to see, I'm out on the west coast of Canada, so happy to see some of the blossoms starting to appear outside and a little bit of a waking up after the sort of overcast winter we've had out here. So yeah, feeling good.
I like the way that you said a little bit of waking up. When I hear that, what comes to mind for me is I envision this invitation, an arrival, so to speak, of new beginning.
I mean, thinking about that as you offer it back to me, thinking about what I'm working on and how I'm proceeding in my own portfolio of activities. There are always new beginnings, I think. I just hosted my staff meeting for the DTRC, and I have another kind of practice that I try and say Happy New Month at the beginning of the month, as well as Happy New Year. And why not take every opportunity that we have to kind of refresh, reset, meet each other anew, let any of the premeditated expectations or assumptions fall by the wayside and allow us to enter into the now together, wherever that happens to be.
What a great way of saying that. Happy new month. Oh, how I like that. I do.
Happy new week too, but I don't go that far at this point.
Yeah. Why not, right? Why not probably add that one to your portfolio as well, right? I enjoy the happy new month because, I again, come back to that arrival, a new beginning. And so, yes, happy new month. I think I'm going to have to adapt that, Megan. I appreciate that.
Over to you, please. Yeah.
Well, as we begin today, I would love if we could revisit something that I shared at the top of the interview, which was that you live by the following: lead with empathy and one deep breath. Let's talk about leading with empathy. Why do those words resonate with you?
I think they're just aligned with that refresh, renew, always sort of enter into encounters with openness, with sensitivity, with respect for all the things that are going on for others that you might not know about and don't need to know about, but that we are all carrying. We carry so many layers and stories and histories and challenges, along with all the joys and, you know, enthusiasms and passions that we carry. But I can't possibly know all of those things. And so I think leading with empathy is a bit about leading with an acknowledgement of space for all of those things. And so when I say lead with empathy, I like the way that the word lead has two different meanings, in the sense that as a leader, I think it's my responsibility to lead my team with empathy in all the ways that I've described. But I also think that it's something that I try to do in general as I go forward, is just, if I'm going to start something, can I start by leading with empathy rather than leading with something else? It's a practice, reminder to me to refresh my commitment to that, because I fail. We all do. I rush into things, or I make assumptions, or I, fail to recognize that something's going on for someone that I didn't leave enough space for. So I think it's all of those things. I'm really interested in practices. And I think this comes from my dance background, my movement background, because that's where I learned about practicing and continuing to refresh your commitments, refresh your ways of acting, doing, being in the world, and keeping them alive and present and dynamic in our ways of being. And it's still a practice, so I'm still working on it. I think it has helped me in my work as the executive director at the DTRC. And I think it's part of my personal life. It's helped me to build deeper relations with the people that I'm in relation with.
Indeed, yes. I'm curious also about the one deep breath. Can you speak to how that also resonates and sits with you?
Yeah, I said, I call it my cheeky statement, because I think lots of people have heard the phrase, just take three deep breaths. And I fundamentally don't have time to take three deep breaths because there's always too much going on. So I just was joking about saying, well, if I can at least take one deep breath, that will help me. And, you know, talking about somatics and body awareness, and even one deep breath will help reset. It will help give me a sense of calm or whatever. So yeah, it's a bit of a joke, not joke, in that sense of playing with that three deep breaths. Well, I'll just take one. Hopefully it'll work. It usually causes the other two to happen. And so that's where it works. Like if I take one deep breath, then it generally, I want to take another and another.
One of the things that I really enjoy is that opportunity to listen to the rise and the fall of my breath, and what that does in the moment to support my nervous system and to support my peace in the moment as well. And so the one deep breath speaks to me.
Yeah, I think speaking to practices and maybe how these two phrases work for me is that I have them to lean into, or they are reminders to myself because I've repeated them enough times. They come in and support me when I need them to, in a way. I'm interested by your reflection on, the rise and the fall of your breath and how that supports you and helps with nervous system regulation or whatever it might be, how you articulate that. I find myself very compelled by the turnings of the breath at each end of it, if you will. It's not really an end, but at each cycle, this sort of moment where the inhale becomes the exhale, and there's this really compelling turn that takes place that is a suspension in a way of both, and that happens at the top and the bottom of the cycle, or the sides of the cycle, however we want to look at breath. Is it a I mean it's a multidimensional phenomenon. Is actually something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about in my own somatic practices and research and my PhD work. So I'm really compelled by the potential of that moment of turning, that moment of both and, where neither is happening and both are happening at the same time.
Neither is happening, but both are happening. What have you discovered in that space? Has there been anything that's come up for you as you have looked within that?
My dissertation and research was on the work of avant-garde choreographer Deborah Hay and her solo practices. And so in that work, I danced her a solo of hers, documented it through lots of experiential writing, analyzed the writing, and then theorized what the poetics of her work may be. This is what I offered in this work. And in that process, I coined the phrase somatic anacrusis, which is about this both and turning point, suspension of potentiality, of this beautiful state where meaning hasn't landed and there's all kinds of freedom for possibility there. Before we name something, or before we identify something, or before we objectify something, there's this space where we haven't specified anything. It is like everything is happening and nothing is happening all at the same time. And so, again, largely informed by my research with Deborah Hay, and so if you're familiar with her work, this will have resonances in certain ways. So where I took this, was really to think it through and theorize it as a space of ethical relationality, a space of potential for ethical relations. And as I say this, I'm thinking about this lead with empathy, and empathy is a different thing than ethical relations, but they're connected in some way. But I think this space where everything is happening and nothing is happening, where we haven't landed, where we haven't made a specificity, we haven't labeled, we haven't categorized, leaves room for newness, otherness, the possibility of being otherwise than we might have been 2 minutes ago or 3 days ago. And that if we can come into that kind of moment in our interrelations with each other, I feel like there's more room for us to be more fully ourselves, our counterpart, or another. And that we can meet there.
Megan, your research queries the aesthetics of ethics. Were there foundational curiosities for you or concerns that drew you to these specific areas of study?
That's a great question, and I think it's hard for me to trace back where all of this began now. I think that my interest in communication has always been a framework for my questions around relationality. how we can get closer to that fullness through communication, speaking, writing, what have you, and education. And I'm speaking to these three themes in my kind of portfolio. So communication, education, of course, movement. But education as a practice of supporting the learning and growth of being, of human beings, not as in I'm going to teach you how to dance, but because our encounter is structured through dance, hopefully there's something much larger going on there that, you know, all of my students, and I don't know if they knew this or I even knew this as we were working together in a studio, but that it's really about, yeah, facilitating the opportunity for growth, self-knowledge, knowledge of others, of how to be and how to feel fulfilled and how to go forth well in the world.
Yes. And when you mentioned encounter with dance, I started to think deeply about what that means. Even for me, when I think about my personal encounter with dance, and what that has meant within the space of my learning and my spiritual connection and my relationship to others. When you think about your own encounter with dance, what comes to mind for you?
When you say that to me, I think all the way back to when I first started to take dance lessons, and that, you know, that was an encounter. I think what I would say now is that that encounter is an ongoing encounter. My encounter with dance continues and changes all the time. You know, I started as a like Highland dance, Highland and Scottish country dance. That was a kind of encounter with dance, and then ballet and contemporary and experimental performance and improvisation. And yeah, I think it's expansive now in terms of what that means as a practitioner, as a educator, as an audience member. It's an ongoing thing, and I keep meeting dance differently and keep having questions about it and my relationship with it, if you will.
Thank you, Megan. We're going to take a break and be right back with the ever so wonderful Megan right after this. Let's talk about one of the many ways that you encounter dance, which is through the Dancer Transition Resource Center. Can you talk about the framework of the organization and also your encounter or engagement with the organization as well?
Sure. So the DTRC is a now 40-year-old dance institution in the Canadian landscape, and I'm very privileged to be the executive director of this organization and to be able to build on the incredible work that's been done by people before me, for sure. The organization is really built to support dancers in their process of transition. Initially, when sort of the end of a performing career would arise, and now, and for many, many years, the organization has been oriented to supporting dancers through all the transitions that they may face throughout their career, professional and personal, from entering into the dance profession and all through one's time inside the dance profession, however we want to characterize that. So it's really about career development for dancers in a different way of saying it. Sometimes the word transition makes people a little nervous because they might associate that with, leaving the field, which is it was a beautiful, empowering, and incredible transition that many folks go through. And there are so many other moments that are moments of change, moments of challenge, of course, sometimes moments of crisis, and also moments of shift, of new opportunities, of, great new possibilities that can come up in a dance career. So, we understand transition to be fundamental to everything that we're doing, and the organization's framework then offers different services that support these different types of transitions. So we have member services. So folks who are performing dancers can be members of the DTRC and then participate in our services for members, including a counseling program where we provide subsidized counseling, and including our grants and awards program where we provide funding for different types of skill development and training in parallel careers or post-performance careers, if the case may be. That's on our membership side. And then we also have a suite of learning programs, which are free and open to anybody, not exclusively framed around a membership model. And these programs include workshops on financial wellness or career wellness. They include networking opportunities. They include small group mentorship programs to support dancers, self-identifying dancers who might find value in what we have to offer, to join us as participants in a variety of these different programs. We also do a series of workshop presentations in training institutions and studios and dance hubs, where we just provide a kind of introduction to career development in dance, ways to think about what a career in dance might look like. There are lots of different versions of a career in dance that don't necessarily hit the radar and aren't necessarily well understood by young people coming into the profession. And so the goal with these workshops is to empower younger dancers to see all the different variety of possibilities for keeping dance in their lives as a professional commitment, while also becoming fulfilled in lots of other ways in life and finding their own unique pathway. I think many things about the DTRC and the work that we're doing and the work that I'd like to see us doing. And again, acknowledging all the work that has been done to allow this organization to be, the stable organization, touch wood, that it is in the dance space. I think having had a career in dance that has many different strands and commitments, gives me some perspective on what some people might be finding on their career pathway, but I really want to acknowledge that that's a very limited perspective, even though I have had many different you know, commitments. I bring only my perspective to this. And so it's really, really important to continue to listen and learn about the realities of other folks' pathways through this professional space. Professional, carefully said in quotes, because that's also a tricky term and does have some baggage that, you know, we want to acknowledge and open up and crack open. So some people don't identify with that word and yet definitely can benefit from the supports that we have to offer. So we don't want that to be perceived as a barrier for folks who might not identify with the word professional and yet hear us talking about the work that we do as for professional dancers. So yes, there are definitely boundaries to the mandate of this organization. What I'd like to see is that we, you know, understand what those boundaries are, make sure they're healthy while reducing as many barriers as possible to access for the supports that we have. We've been playing with these two words inside our organization in our strategic planning and in our thinking to say, so we can't be all things to all people. We cannot possibly serve everybody. So there have to be some healthy boundaries around who we can serve and who we can serve well, while also making sure that we are wise to where barriers may be problematic and where we can work hard to reduce those and increase accessibility to what we have to offer. I think that if we can provide a space for folks to lean in, if resilience is not as robust for them, that we can be a little outsourced resilience for them to move through those moments, to help them manage the really scary parts about those transitions or shifts, if you will, let's call them shifts, while also really helping them to see the possibilities and the excitement that they're in, then we've done something, I think. And I say we, not me. We have our counseling program where we have a, you know, a roster of very skilled counselors with familiarity in working with artists and the types of transitions and shifts that happen for artists. And then, you know, we have members of our team who are more forward facing with our members who work with them and steward them through. And then we can call on other resources as well. We're not the be all end all, the DTRC, and we definitely see ourselves as part of an ecosystem of supports in the way of other organizations and in the way of other artists, former members, and folks who have, you know, walked the walk before and might be able to share. I guess I have one other thought about this going into shifts and the nature of uncertainty, and that while those are inevitably spaces of uncertainty, as artists, we've got a superpower in that regard. I think as part of artistic training and artistic practice, we learn to step into uncertainty. That's the creative process. We don't know what we're making while we're making it. I mean, yes, we have visions, we have ideas, we have plans, but there's nothing like that moment of stepping into the uncertainty of a creative process and finding that with commitment, the process carries you forward. I think the service orientation of the DTRC, that always we're putting or trying to put the artists first or at the heart of our considerations, there's a kind of commitment to serving the sector, serving our field, serving our fellow artists through the work that we do that began with the founder, Joyce-Ann Sidemus. And she reiterated it at our 40th anniversary celebration in October when we were honoring her, is that we have to support each other as artists. Because nobody else will, I guess, is the rest of that sentence. That's not true. There are so many people who do support the arts, and we're grateful for them, of course. But I think that the work that the organization does still rings true to that commitment that came through her founding of the organization, and that all the folks who've worked with the organization as board members, as donors, as staff, as volunteers, as interns, as guest speakers like yourself, that is a shared commitment and it persists. I think sometimes on the inside of an organization, sometimes it's hard to keep that light shining because the infrastructure of an organization requires maintenance, requires care. And as a colleague of mine said, the care and feeding of the organization itself can sometimes overshadow the service or the artists. And so I think that we do a good job of continuing to bring the artists back to the heart of the matter. Even though, a 40-year-old organization requires a lot of administrative care.
And that's the beauty, I would think, about the ecosystem.
Yeah. And I think that absolutely, we try to also keep wise to that ecosystem and the need to keep watering all the parts, meaning other organizations in the space and, beyond our own organizational crucible, if you will, beyond our membership, to try and have the widest possible embrace and the sort of biggest view of horizon in our work. It's a practice. Again, I'll come back to that. We never achieve it. We're always in a beautiful way failing and trying again or recommitting to the practice of, engaging, looking around, learning, questioning what we have. Is it working? How might we adjust or shift? Staying dynamic, staying nimble, staying lively, and trying to also care for our own ecosystem inside the organization. A service orientation can sometimes lead to overextension. So there's that comes back to the lead with empathy piece is, how can our team be well as well in the work that we do? And it comes back to healthy boundaries. We can't do everything. So how do we manage our own capacity and model resilience and sustainability? I think I'm like learning from myself right now as I say this, though.
I really appreciate that very important question. How can our team be well? What an important question. And what an opportunity it allows for a very critical check-in.
There's so much power, I find, in a good way, in key questions.
Yes.
Because they invite us to step into answering.
Stay with us. More of Turnout Radio coming up after this. Thank you. Today's history segment takes us on a journey to visit the DTRC. When DTRC founder Jorsan Sidimas began researching her book, Exchanges, Life After Dance, no structure existed in North America to deal with the near-crisis issue of transition after a career in professional dance performance. But by 1983, two government-commissioned reports established a pressing need for Canadian transition support services that would respond to the needs of the professional dance community over time. After 9 months of joint research with the Dance in Canada Association and the Canadian Association of Professional Dance Organizations, the Dancer Transition Center, later named Dancer Transition Resource Center, was incorporated on March 20th, 1985, and opened on September 1st of that year, with Jorsan as executive director and Karen Kane as president. Jorsan Sidimas led the DTRC until her retirement in 2005, when former professional dancer and actress Amanda Hancox took the helm. Amanda retired in 2019. The Dancer Transition Resource Center is a national charitable organization dedicated to helping dancers make necessary transitions into, within, and from professional performing careers. DTRC also operates as a resource center for the dance community and general public, and support activities that improve the socioeconomic conditions of artists across the country. As a world leader in dancer transition, DTRC are active participants in international conferences and research initiatives and help drive change within the dance community. Check out the Dancer Transition Resource Center at dtrc.ca. That's dtrc.ca. We have more with Megan Andrews coming up after this. We're back with Megan Andrews, who's in the house with me today, and we're talking about the DTRC. And Megan, what's coming up this season that you can tell us about?
Thank you. We have in April, we're hosting a new workshop series. So a lot of our offerings are virtual, which means that we can extend them to folks beyond the main city centers, and really hope to give access to more folks to these offerings. Our career wellness series is happening in April. So this is a new series this year, and it includes two workshops on transferable skills and employability. So we're one of our longtime career counselors is working with us to develop the content, and it will in two parts. In the first part, folks will learn about how to identify skills that are built through dance, and then how to understand their value in other fields of employment. So dancers have so many really valuable soft skills that we develop in our training and in our practices. And sometimes it's just about learning how to reframe them or articulate them differently so that they actually have relevance and relatability to folks in other fields, so that they can hear how those skills are really transferable. So that's what we're working on for that workshop series. And that will kind of culminate our workshop series for the year. We did already offer our financial wellness series. So we did a session on budgeting, a session on saving and investing, and then we did our session on taxes for creatives, which will come back annually. And we offered that in collaboration with a bunch of service organization partners in the dance space. So those are our program offers. Those are the free learning programs available to anyone who finds value in them. They're geared for dance folks. And then our member services continue year round. So we have a June deadline for our granting program, and we have counseling offers going on all the time.
And where can individuals learn more about all of the above?
Our website and our socials. DTRC.ca is the best place to go. You can navigate to all the different offerings that we have and learn a little bit more about the organization. And you can follow us on socials, on Instagram at Dance Transition. Sign up for our newsletter. We send out a quarterly newsletter, you know, the usual, the usual communication channels.
Well, Megan, I look forward to all of the above. Thank you for joining me on the show today. It's been such a pleasure to be in conversation with you.
Well, thank you, Nicole. It's been a lovely conversation, and I'm delighted about things that we were able to talk about, and the chance to share with your listeners about the DTRC and the work that we do. And I just invite folks to definitely check us out. And if you find that you don't see yourself in what you see, come knock on our door anyways, because we'd like to invite you in. That would be a message I'd like to leave with the folks listening. And also just to offer my gratitude to you, Nicole, for having me on the show, for hosting me in such a lovely way. And to all the folks that are working at the DTRC and, you know, helping this organization continue to strive and thrive, from, you know, the board right down to our volunteer interns and sideways to all our members and participants, partner organizations, donors, funders, you name it. It takes a village. We are a village. We are part of a village or an ecosystem. So yeah, just sharing gratitude and thank you.
Thank you again for joining me on Turnout Radio. Such a pleasure. You're listening to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. Thank you. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. That was Megan Andrews behind the mic with me today. Many thanks to Megan for joining me on the show. And folks, if you missed the top of the interview, we invite you to visit turnoutradio.com, CIUT.FM, and some of your favorite podcast platforms where this episode will soon be streaming. Now, turnoutradio.com is also where you can access a list of resources and our archived library of past interviews. Well, we are celebrating 10 years of Turnout Radio. It was back in March 2016 that we began airing with my fellow co-hosts Malgorzata Nowacka-May and Samara Thompson, and then shortly after, we were joined by guest co-host Sean Byfield and an outstanding list of wonderful collaborators and guest co-hosts who have joined us throughout the course of the many years that we've been on the air. Sending a big shout out to all this morning. And as Turnout Radio enters a decade of programming, we want to thank you for tuning in each week and showing us the love. We greatly appreciate it. And we'd love to connect with you. To get in touch with our production team, you can email us at turnoutradio@ciut.fm. Coming up this season, stay tuned for highlights and updates as we continue the celebration of our milestone anniversary. And also coming up, stay locked in right here to CIUT 89.5 FM to learn about the upcoming Sound of Your City fundraising campaign, which takes place May 25th straight through to May 31st. Stay tuned for upcoming announcements and shares. Again, that's Monday, May 25th, straight through to Sunday, May 31st. Well, this morning, we are pleased to share a giveaway with you. Red Sky Performance and the Toronto Symphony Orchestra present the world premiere of She Holds Up the Stars, commissioned by the Toronto Symphony Orchestra in association with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra, TO Live, and the National Arts Centre's National Creation Fund. On stage at Roy Thompson Hall in Toronto on April 19th, 2026 at 1:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. EST, with school shows on stage April 13th to the 18th. She Holds Up the Stars is an original story-based performance written, created, and directed by Sandra Laurent, which is based on her award-winning young adult novel of the same name. Now, the multidisciplinary production brings together a contemporary Indigenous story, theater, puppetry, and live orchestral music to create an immersive and deeply moving experience for audiences of all ages, exploring themes of identity, belonging, and relationship to land. Turnout Radio is pleased to partner to give away one pair of tickets to the Sunday, April 19th showing at 1:30 p.m. EST. Be the first person to email us now at turnoutradio@ciut.fm. That's turnoutradio@ciut.fm to win one pair of tickets. The winner will be contacted via email. Our thanks to the presenters of She Holds Up the Stars for this morning's giveaway. Well, this brings us to a close of today's show. Thank you for tuning in to share time and rhythm with us. Join us again next week for more of Turnout Radio right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. I hope your week finds you turning out to dance. Thank you.